Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody as of right now, but after a brief introduction, I'm going to throw to a conversation I just recorded with George Sedano of ESPN. He is everywhere, all over their platforms, and I could not possibly be happier for one of the nicest guys, really, in the industry, finding that much success. It's really cool to watch. I'm just going to briefly talk and preview tomorrow night's game against the Minnesota Timberwolves and Phoenix, the Phoenix game over the weekend, and then I'll throw to that conversation. I just want to get out of the way because it was a really good conversation. We talked about the season in general and how LeBron has felt about it maybe, and how the city has handled this first season of LeBron, how the Lakers have handled this first season of LeBron. It's a really fun conversation. And then in the second segment, we're going to talk a little bit about this whole Carmelo Anthony situation. And look, I know that the more I talk about it, the more I breathe oxygen into it, and that fire just keeps on burning. But with guests like George Sedano and previous guests where I've talked to people who covered LeBron in Cleveland, LeBron speaks a certain language almost, and I think it's important to get that context from people who have spoken that language for a while now to kind of understand and grasp where he might be coming from, why he might prefer to, because a lot of people, I'm sure, are kind of scratching their heads like, LeBron, how aren't you seeing this with Carmelo? How aren't you seeing that this guy just isn't very good, right? And so we're gonna talk a little bit about that, and how the Lakers are looking at the situation, and then also just at the very end there, how they might handle the trade deadline and some of the moves that they might be looking to make there, and their activity level as it's current, where it currently is. Like I said, though, I want to really quickly start by talking about this stretch of two games for the Lakers that are absolutely monstrous. I'll put it this way. A lot of people think that, you know, you have to win the games against your playoff competition. To a certain extent, obviously, for tiebreaker reasons and just in general, like, you want to win as many games as you possibly can. But you play more games, and there are actually probably higher stakes against the teams that you should beat, right? So if, let's say you go 500 against teams that are also in the playoffs or teams that you're going to be competing against in the playoffs, which, generally speaking, with teams that you're going to be fighting to get into the playoffs with, those teams are going to be evenly matched, and 500 makes sense that you would split those games for the most part against those teams. That means then that the deciding factor, or one of the deciding factors, mathematically speaking, is how do you do in games that you're supposed to win? And that's why it's so frustrating, you know, when you hear guys on the Lakers say, like, it's a lot easier to get up for these games against other teams that they consider equal or better than they are. Well, sure, that's great, guys, but you also need to take care of business when you have that opportunity. And look, Minnesota has had an up and down season. They've had probably, they're one of the few teams who have had a more turbulent season than the Lakers have this year. The Lakers should probably beat them, even without LeBron and even without Lonzo Ball. They're playing them at home. The Wolves are, Wiggins is still doing his, you know, I'll play hard this game and I'll kind of float next game, or from possession to possession even. And the Lakers kind of sort of need to take care of business here. And then especially they need to take care of business against the Phoenix Suns. If they, let's say they split one of two here. Okay, you kind of tread water there. If they win both of them, awesome. You keep pace in the West. If they lose both of them, that then means that the Lakers need to win. They wind up having to look at one of those games against another playoff competitor as an actual must-win. And that's where things get a little tricky here. So, big couple games coming up here. Rajon Rondo comes back, and as Pete and I talked about, we're really looking forward to what that does for Brandon Ingram's role, Kyle Kuzma's role. It would be nice if Alex Caruso was given a few more meaningful minutes so that Ingram can stay in a role that he's a little bit more comfortable in. I don't think that's how they're going to handle it. They're probably going to stagger a lot of Ingram and Rondo's minutes and try to maintain a primary creator on the court. And then if it isn't Ingram or Rondo, then it turns into Lance Stephenson. And in those minutes, you just hope that it isn't a disaster, right, where neither Rondo or Ingram are on the court and Lance is told to run the offense. So we'll see how these games go. Big ones ahead, but enough of me rambling. I'm going to throw this conversation that I had here with George Sedano of ESPN. He's on the Jump. He has the Sedano Show on ESPN Radio in the afternoons and evenings. He's been really cool for me and for the show. So give it a listen, give it a share, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. All right, we're joined now by George Sedano of ESPN, friend of the show. We have yet to have a beard, so we got to change that at some point. But yeah, thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, man, always happy to do it.
It's been an interesting year. I'll put it that way. I think about as interesting as I would have imagined with LeBron being a Laker and all that. But even that might be underselling it. We were going to go in an opposite order here, but just in general, how do you think LeBron has enjoyed being a Laker? How the Lakers have handled a LeBron season? How Los Angeles has handled a LeBron season? This is and for you being relatively new to the market with your new show and all that, how's that experience just in general been?
I'll start with what I think and what I know, I guess, about LeBron, because those are coincide a little bit. I think LeBron knew what he was getting into. I think he came into this with his eyes wide open. It doesn't mean that when they were 2-5 and he made those comments in the scrum in the locker room where he said, "You don't want to see when I lose my patience," and then subsequently a week or so later told Chris Haynes, "Yeah, I was going to crack," that it was all roses. You know what I'm saying? That start wasn't pretty for him. Clearly, the start wasn't pretty for Luke. And we all know how that ended up with Magic Johnson at that point, with the admonishment, as we like to call it.
Yeah.
But I think overall, you know, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. There's been an ebb and a flow to LeBron, which would be natural to any human being, right? The start was weird. I would say before that even, right? Like the whole defacing of the murals was strange. Like it just was an odd beginning. Like it should have been celebrated differently, I felt like.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, you know, in a moment of truth, like he would probably tell you that it felt weird. And then they got it off to the rough start. But then there was that time where they were the 4 seed and you're like, oh, okay. He can drag this team to the Western Conference Finals, which, look, still might be the case, to be honest with you, if he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But, then he suffers the worst injury of his career. And I had this conversation on the radio show yesterday with Mike Trudell. I'm like, he's 34 years old. He's had the worst injury of his career. He's like, well, it's just a strain. And I'm like, come on, man. Like,
it is literally the worst injury of his career.
Right. Like, he's missed more games than ever. You know right. what I'm saying? Like, this isn't even debatable. Like, and I was like, he said the words pop. Like, I heard it pop.
Yeah.
And Zach Lowe was on my show yesterday, and we talked about this. And that's the fear that we have. You hear him use those words, and the Lakers have done this thing where he's been day-to-day, right?
Yep.
And let's face it, we clearly now know that that's not the truth. That he's not day to day.
Rich never Paul been was like, no. This is actually, here's our timetable.
Yeah. It was at best 3 weeks, is what he told Sam Amick. And it's probably going to be closer to 6. And look, I've talked to guys around the league who've had similar injuries. And they say that it's generally 4 to 6 weeks. Like I've had like a conversation now with at least 6 or 7 different guys that have had that injury. And they all said basically the same thing. So I think that that's gotta be really, really frustrating. because he has to think of his mortality for
exactly.
the first time.
That's right? that was the point that I made as soon as it happened was he's looking at the end. Like, you can't help but kind of envision the end at this point, because this is now literally the worst injury of his career. And it happened from just slipping.
Like, right.
It wasn't contact. He just kind of slipped. And it's crazy.
And but that's what happens when you get old, okay? Yeah. I'm 41, okay?
I just tweaked my hip getting out of bed.
Right. And there are times that I do things and I, you know, it was just a nothing thing. Like, I'm just a regular movement I've done, you know, a million times, and all of a sudden something doesn't go right. And that's what happens as you get older, even for the guy who spends $1 million on his body. Okay. That's going to happen. It's why the saying is father time is undefeated. So that's clearly got to be frustrating. Clearly he was frustrated. So was Magic and Rob when we have that image of them standing in the tunnel when they're getting whacked at Staples Center. So to me, unfortunately, that's still the lasting image of the season to this point. Now, look, the season is only halfway done. There's still plenty to go. But yeah, I think that there's that. There's this sense of his mortality. He sees his best friends. Dwayne Wade is retiring. Yep. Chris Paul is hurt.
Melo can't even get in the can't get on a team.
Right. Melo can't get on a team. Right. Like, all those things have to be swirling in his head. He wouldn't be human if that wasn't the case. But I do think that that's why they need to be as cautious as possible, because all you got to do is get in the tournament with him. Like, I'm not worried about seeding this, that, and the other. If they get in the tournament and he's 100%, they should be a team that easily wins a round, in my opinion, barring them facing Golden State in the first round, or even get still to the conference finals. Like, I think that's it. But to answer your question about the LeBron part of it, is that I'm sure he has to have some moments where he felt good about it and some moments where he's clearly frustrated. As far as the way the city, I think, has received him, I think it's just been an incomplete, right? Like, when you're in college, you know how sometimes you just get an incomplete?
I have never.
I'm sure. I think there's just things that, you know, we haven't figured it out yet. But I think that people are starting to get the stuff that I've been trying to say for a long time, whether it was on my radio show, here on these podcasts with people like yourself, that this is different. I know that you've been through Kobe Bryant, you've been through Shaq, and you've been through all these different iterations of stars, but this guy is different for a number of reasons. The type of attention he brings, the type of partnership that he's going to have with this particular organization, and I stress the word partnership. It is not a traditional employee-employer relationship. And all those things have played out almost exactly like I thought they would. So there's that. And for me on the radio, I think it's just been trying to educate people without trying to come across as like a pompous ass, which is hard for me. Look, I get it. My tone sucks sometimes, okay? But I'm very matter of fact. Like, I look at it this way. I treat people, and this is what I've told people on the radio, is that I don't BS my friends. So the key to this radio show is I try to build a community, and I'm going to treat you like my friends. And sometimes that means I got to tell you the truth, and you may not want to hear the truth. So that's kind of the way it's worked, at least for me. And I think more and more people have started to understand at least where I'm coming from, which isn't easy. But I do have a little bit of experience in this arena. Not just the NBA arena, but the arena of covering LeBron James.
Yeah, I've kind of put it when I've spoken to people who have prior experience with LeBron, and for my listenership here, that it's a language almost. You almost have to speak LeBron's language, and and in that translation, there are some things that you don't necessarily want to hear. It's just like if you have a conversation with somebody in your second language, and they say something that you think, like, that can't be right. They can't have actually meant that because it's an unfortunate truth or whatever. And so you think, oh, no, something just got lost in translation. No, a lot of times some of those things that you think, no way, LeBron can't actually want Carmelo Anthony on his team. No, that hasn't been lost in translation. He actually really does want him. And him, you know, him saying, oh, no, the front office, they do their job, I do my job. Like, that's just him kind of, lightening up the pressure, but he still very much wants Melo on the team. We're going to get a little bit more to Melo here in a second, but just in terms of like the basketball itself, you and I spoke a lot before the season of about the experiments that the Lakers were trying to go through here with having creators around LeBron instead of shooters. I think while LeBron was healthy, that made for a really bumpy path, right? It made for some unfortunate pairings, most notably Ingram and LeBron. But I think with LeBron hurt, having all those creators on the court, now unfortunately all the creators are hurt at the same time, but having those extra creators that they put around him, that kind of sort of has made it so that the Lakers can maybe tread water a little bit better than, say, the prior Cleveland teams. Would you roll with that theory, or do you think, no, it was probably smarter to just go with shooters?
Look, I think that it doesn't have to be one or the other. Okay. Yeah. I think that you could have had a combination of both. When I had, and if people want to subscribe to the podcast, if they missed the radio show yesterday when I had Zach Lowe on, we talked about this. And I've said this in July, and I'll say it now. You know, and I said it when the season started, and I've continued to say it, which is like, you didn't have to go and surround him with just shooters.
Yeah.
Like, you could have just kept Brook Lopez for $3 million.
Oh.
And, you know, he's shooting six threes a game, and they could use a guy who can stretch the floor from there, which would be nice around LeBron. And I think that he would be helping LeBron. And Zach and I talked about that. And I was saying, look, I know that they want one-year deals. There's a guy actually right now in Miami that they can try to get, who's on a one-year deal, in Wayne Ellington. I thought, yep, that was a guy they should have signed from the get-go.
Absolutely.
And I know he's been here before, but he was a guy who made 233s last year.
Yeah.
So it's like, that guy, I know you don't want a group of specialists, but it doesn't mean you can't have a specialist or two. And Brooke, I don't even think is a specialist at this point. Like, he's still a good player.
He was very good for him last year.
For sure. And Ellington is that. I don't get the Julius Randle thing. I think you could have signed him. And yes, I know it would have potentially hurt your cap space, but my guess is he would have been an easily movable contract. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. And he has a player option this year. He's opting out.
Right.
That money's off your cap anyway.
But because you and Aaron Mintz have a bad relationship, and I think part of it, look, there's a number of layers to that, whether it's D'Angelo or Paul George or him, I don't think it helped the cause. They kind of made a judgment on Julius way too soon, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So as much as I think Magic and Rob have done some really good things, create the flexibility, obviously land LeBron, I think there are still things you can be critical of. Yep. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And those are the things that I look at. I don't think it's a one or the other thing. I think you could have had both. Like, I'd rather have Brook Lopez than Michael Beasley. I'd rather have Wayne Ellington than maybe
Lance.
Lance, right, exactly. And we'll get to Carmelo in a second. But I think that there are guys on this roster that don't fit the mold of even what LeBron wanted. LeBron was the one talking about it at the end of last season that he wanted to play with high IQ players. And, you know, Brook Lopez fits that mold, right? Yeah. Wayne Ellington fits that mold. Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, who's played well for them. I'm not trying to knock him, but JaVale McGee, Lance Stephenson, and Michael Beasley do not fit that mold as guys you would consider as high IQ players. Rondo certainly does.
Absolutely.
So that's the kind of stuff that has been strange to me. The roster construction was flawed at the time and continues to be flawed.
Yep, I completely agree. We're going to take another quick second here, and we've already alluded to Carmelo Anthony a couple times. I just think there are so many layers to what's going on here that it deserves kind of a wide berth. So we're going to bullcrap about Carmelo Anthony here in a second. So the way I would kind of put this, and the way that the entire story has been reported to me feels like a good starting point, where You have LeBron, who has acknowledged Carmelo's potential fit a couple times. You have the leaks and stuff that have obviously come from his camp. Like anything that comes from, say, Joe Vardon of The Athletic in Cleveland. Like yeah. that's very much LeBron's. That's LeBron's people that are just kind of whispering to Joe, who is obviously a very good reporter, but that's just where that's probably coming from. But it's also funny to see the leaks that are coming from the Lakers very obviously when they question his conditioning and the overall state of his game. Like they're kind of sort of calling Carmelo chubby and that he hasn't been good the last couple of years. And if you're willing to leak that about somebody who you are quote unquote reportedly interested in or linked to, then that sends a very strong message of like, no, it's probably not our call here. How have you been watching this all go down? This story refuses to die for a number of reasons, but I think the pinnacle or the top reason why it hasn't died is because Carmelo's best friend is LeBron.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that it's going to be a fascinating game of chicken, right? Because does LeBron put his, I guess, equity on the line here for Carmelo Anthony, who is one of his closest friends?
Mm-hmm.
You know, considering the Lakers are not interested. And by the way, there's not a lot of interest, period.
Not at all. Yeah.
You know, when you look back at the offseason, I remember at Summer League, there were two teams that were interested, the Rockets and the Heat. And clearly we know the Rockets don't want him anymore after what happened. And my understanding is Miami is not interested either.
Yeah.
So, you know, and look, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe that could change. But as far as I know, I don't believe there's any real interest in Carmelo Anthony in Miami, which puts LeBron in a tough spot. You know, he wants familiarity, which I don't blame him. And I do think that in his mind, and maybe he is doing this because emotion's getting to him, I think he believes that Carmelo's still got some juice left in the tank. I don't know if that's the case. I think the biggest problem Carmelo has had is that he doesn't see the guy in the mirror that the rest of us
there's
see.
Zero self-awareness.
Right. That is the biggest problem. And look, if Carmelo was willing to be the break glass in case of emergency guy, like we've talked about with Lance or Beasley, then yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But I'm not getting rid of one of the young projects for him, like even an Isaac Bonga. So what does that say about where Carmelo is at this stage when you can't get rid of a guy like Isaac Bonga? And I like Carmelo personally, but I said this on The Jump once and I took some heat for it. Not only from fans, but, you know, some players who like Carmelo. Mm-hmm. And I had to kind of explain myself that it's not personal. But I said, I don't even think he's a functional NBA player anymore.
No.
Like, I question it, at least, at the very minimum.
Not so long as he maintains that he has to have a certain role.
Correct. So that was kind of the caveat. And once I explained it to guys, they kind of understood. But the emotion of it certainly, you know, gets guys because there's a lot of guys around the league. I'm talking about former players as well that are like, yo, man, Melo deserves a shot. And Melo probably does deserve a shot. I saw James Harden mention it recently. Melo is very well liked in the NBA community.
Extremely well liked.
And I understand why. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like he needs to understand what stage of his career he's in. And if he does, then I think the Lakers should explore it. If he doesn't, then, you know, I think that they're going to have to just go the route of maybe potentially upsetting LeBron a little bit. I don't think it'll upset him to the point that, you know, that it's going to be an issue. He's getting signed for another 3 years. But here's what I would say. If the Lakers are worried about LeBron, I would bring Carmelo in for this reason. LeBron has been really good at separating business and friendship. He walked away from Dwayne Wade in 2014 when Dwayne Wade still had a little juice left in the tank. Okay. And, you know, we saw Dwayne the following year, you know, they didn't make the playoffs, but the year after that, Dwayne won a playoff series for Miami at that stage, you know, at 34, 35 years old or whatever it was. So he still had enough in the tank that, you know, he could still do enough to win you a series.
Definitely more in the tank than Carmelo has right now.
No question.
Yeah.
So if LeBron walked away from him then, and by the way, in essence, walked away from him in Cleveland, too, where Dwayne still showed a little bit of flash, no pun intended, last year, right? Like, he had some moments in the regular season, had one great game in the playoffs, even at 35, 36 years old. Again, even last year, Dwayne, who understands he's not the same player anymore, who's playing 20 minutes a night, okay? Yeah. LeBron walked away from him twice. He's arguably best friend in the world. He'd walk away from Carmelo. So that's what the Lakers need to understand. This isn't as big a deal as they think. Unless they are so adamant that there's not a guy that he can replace on the roster, then fine, stick to your guns. But it's not like LeBron wouldn't cut ties with Carmelo. If Chris Paul did it, which I thought was a bit surprising, only because, you know, Paul hasn't been in that situation before, whereas LeBron clearly has been with Dwayne. You know, I wouldn't worry about that aspect of it. LeBron understands the difference between business and friendship.
Yeah, I think that's what it all kind of comes down to here. And it's been said on this show, I've had somebody who's covered, a couple people who have covered LeBron out there in Cleveland and went through the Dwayne Wade experience when Wade was a Cav. And they said the same thing, that like LeBron wanted to have his buddy in the locker room and then realized it wasn't working out. And then kind of sort of said, hey, you know, maybe Miami would be a good call. Maybe you want to go finish up your career down there. And maybe the same kind of thing, maybe the same scenario here plays out with Carmelo. The question is, can you lose, you know, say your 14th or 15th guy for nothing, right? And so if there's like – and I think that's kind of what the reports boiled down to, is they said, okay, if we're gonna make a move anyway that's, say, a 2-for-1 player and it opens up a roster spot – then fine, we didn't lose that one player for nothing in case it doesn't work out with Carmelo. But what the Lakers aren't willing to do here is move somebody for the sake of adding Melo. And then if it doesn't work out, if it does work out with Melo, then okay. But I don't think they're willing to risk it not working out with Melo and losing whether it's Bonga, Wagner, or Lance for nothing.
Agreed. And I believe that's the route that they should take. Look, I do think the Lakers are going to be active at the trade deadline. Now, does that mean they actually make a deal? No, I don't know. You know what I mean? But I do believe they're going to explore every single option. I'm telling you that almost with 100% certainty, they're going to kick the tires on a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that necessarily means anything because, you know, 95%, 96%, 97% of exploratory conversations amount to zero in all sports, let alone the NBA, where there's a ton of transactions. Do I think that any of that will involve their young core just to not freak people out? No, I don't believe any of them will involve their young core, barring Anthony Davis becoming available, which I don't believe is the case. No. And by the way, I don't even know if that young core right now, the way things have worked out,
it wouldn't net Anthony Davis.
It wouldn't fetch Anthony Davis anyway. I mean, there's a lot of questions out there about everyone outside of Kuzma. The way I would look at those guys is Kuzma has exceeded expectations. Hart has met expectations. Lonzo hasn't met expectations, partially just based on availability.
Yeah.
You know, it's the second year in a row of that. And, you know, I think Ingram has been a roller coaster. And really, that's been him for 3 years. So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise anymore. Even though I know everyone wants to, you know, hang on to, well, he's only 21 years old. I get it. But Bill Parcells in football has a great saying. If he doesn't bite as a puppy, he's probably never going to bite. So I'm not saying that's the case with Ingram because there are outliers. Giannis, Kawhi, Oladipo. I get it. People around the league, they're wondering, like, what is that? Like, what is Brandon Ingram? What is Lonzo Ball? And I think that you couple that with the fact that there's already like Laker envy and animosity out in, you know, within other organizations.
We've already seen it a couple times.
Yeah, right, for sure. And I think all that coupled with the fact that they're not necessarily meeting expectations doesn't help the cause. Like, I would say those two guys, unfortunately, have underachieved. So, I didn't want to leave you with, I think the Lakers are going to be really active at the trade deadline and everyone's freaking out because
everybody's going.
Right. One of those young guys are going. I don't believe that's the case. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, that'll do it. I you got to go, but thank you very much for hopping on. It's always a blast. I always leave these conversations like, man, could we talk for another 10? But I'm not going to hold you on
longer. I'll come back.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely. Yes. Well, congratulations on the success of your show so far. Tell everybody where they can find it, where they can find you, what you're going to be doing. You've been crazy busy this season, and congratulations on all your success.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, I am all over the place. On the radio, though, in L.A., you can find me 3:30 to 7 in the afternoon on ESPN L.A. 710. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast. It's called The Sedano Show. Very easy to find. Clearly, we talk a ton of basketball. I believe that the Lakers are the most important franchise in Southern California and have always been. So we talk probably more Lakers than any other show in Southern California, or any radio show in America, probably, to be honest with you. So we talk a lot of NBA in general. We obviously talk some NFL and the occasional baseball conversation when the Dodgers give us a reason to. But so you can find it on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review it. Subscribe to it. I'd appreciate it. And then, of course, always you can catch me on shows like The Jump or Around the Horn on ESPN, doing NBA sidelines, the occasional play-by-play for like some G League stuff and Team USA stuff, which has been cool. But I'm actually going to Houston on Friday. I'll do that Raptors-Rockets game from the sideline with Mark Jones and Doris Burke. So I'll have a firsthand look at the phenom of James Harden right now, who is having as crazy a season as maybe since, I guess, you know, Kobe had that wild 35 point per game season. Like, I think that's probably the closest thing I can recall to it. So,
yeah, it's been a crazy season all the way around. Like, the performances, try to find out an MVP and you immediately are met with like a ton of incredible performances throughout the season. So thanks very much for hopping on, George, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Anthony. Anytime, bud.